Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Visually Stunning Movie Podcast. I'm Mark at the other end of the mic today. Ryan's back. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys?
Let's talk. We haven't talked in a little bit.
When I say guys, I should point out that there is a cat that is
running around my office somewhere. She just took off like a cat out of hell, if you will.
Anyway, I say
she's a pain. But she's a cute and lovable pain, but she's a pain in the butt. No, we have not talked in a while, a little bit. Some movies came out last week. We're going to start with one of those, and then we're going to go to this week's biggest release. But last week, a long gestating directorial debut for Dev Patel, Monkey Man, which sounds weird because you look at it and you're like, what is this movie about?
Well, unless you're at least a little bit aware of Indian culture,
right?
Because they have the Monkey King. I mean, there's a lot of that out there. So I'm not going to claim to be an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but at least I kind of, you know. And I think the film starts off explaining what the reference is.
It lays the groundwork for us Westerners.
Which I think is pretty smart, actually, because otherwise you might, because it is like, what in the, why is he putting this monkey mask on, and what in the world is he doing, and what's all this? And you don't really ever have to question that, because it's a story that his mother told him when he was a child, and it stuck with him, and it so happens to be a religious tale that is very well known in India, so that just happens to tie that in as well. I think that actually was a really smart thing. I do think probably Eastern audiences will probably be like, yeah, we know, we get it. Well, actually, you know what? I don't know that they'll feel like it's over-explaining it, because then they'll be like, okay, that's why he connects with this story.
Right.
I don't want to speak for them, but
everything narratively fits. Nothing feels extraneous. It's not like tacked on exposition, which is nice.
It's not Blade Runner narration.
No. So he plays our unnamed, Dev Patel also stars and plays our unnamed protagonist, who adopts a name as the movie goes on for reasons which you'll see. We'll call him Bobby. And sure. I think it's great why he calls himself Bobby.
This is
a revenge story. He had tragic childhood that we learn some about, and then we learn more and more and more as the movie goes on. And it's a revenge tale of the now adult Bobby, as he is trying to punish those responsible for his trauma. It's very Wickian. But it's like the long game wick.
Yeah, I'd say it is, but it isn't. Because I think one of the big, I'm splitting hairs a little bit here, but I think what makes it different than John Wick is John Wick is a very stylized, it's pretty. You know, it's a ballet of sorts.
Okay, one of the things that I mentioned I talked about this somewhere else, but Wick came along and changed action movies. It changed the way they were choreographed. It changed the way they were the way they were shot. So cinematically, it was, they were changed. I mean, I acknowledge that Wick borrowed a lot from Asian movies.
But
it's not a rip.
No, and because you could almost argue that they took the fairy tale martial arts films and merged them. It's kind of like taking a John Woo film. So taking the guns and then adding in more of the lyrical, beautiful, choreographed fantasy film.
Yeah.
The Kung Fu.
Yeah. So Wick brought that in. So everything now is going to be compared to Wick, because that's like the new benchmark, because it did it so well and it's done it across four movies. So in this, you're right. I think it's a little dirtier. Than Wick, but there are scenes where it's shot. And like, this was the second half of that equation. You know, not only are they choreographed different, but they're shot in such a way that even differentiates them away from the original, Asian movies. So Wick did that. And you see that in some of the ways, some of these scenes are shot, fight scenes are shot. Really, they're really pretty cinematically.
And I think that the Raid films also kind of come in, which aren't remotely as, well-known as the John Wick films. But for people who like, brutal action choreography stuff, the two Raid films are phenomenal in that regard. And they're even different than this.
And I need to watch the Raid films. They're on my list. I just can't get to them. But I understand. And they got bumped up higher when I keep reading that I believe it was Raid 2. Jacked up the release of Dread, because Dread came out just after that one, and people were like, well, you're ripping off the Raid 2, and that was not the case. And I love Dread, so if you're going to make a comparison,
I'd have to think about why they would make the comparison, because I obviously
super action film set in a high rise.
Well,
that was I think that was the big thing.
Yeah, but that's not okay. I would say I get that, but that's also a very Judge Dredd thing.
Yeah.
So that's not like it's. I think not apples and oranges, but I don't think one ripped off the other. I just think they happen to have similar concepts. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the Raid, I think, it, ironically, is probably somewhere in between. I think this film, Monkey Man, is in between The Raid and John Wick, stylistically.
That's cool. They're on my list. I want to see them.
So I would say that this is kind of a bridge between those two, but not on purpose. I think he just sent out to make the movie he wanted to make. And as it turned out, that movie was not the movie that the people who bought it thought it was. What it was,
right?
And so Netflix essentially bought it for $30 million, and for reasons that have never been exactly explained, decided that it was too much of something. It was, and if you watch the film, it's like, okay, I can see how this could be too much to certain groups.
There's a lot going on in this. There's one storyline.
Yes.
But it has a whole lot of tributaries.
Well, yeah, because here's the thing. If you don't want to pay any attention to the underground politics, and in this case, it's more of a class system.
Yeah.
Which is political in a sense. But in India, they have a very rigid caste system that, that has existed for forever.
Yeah.
And one of the things that, most of Indian film that has made it over to America, I can't say that I know a lot of films that didn't make it over here, but a lot of times the film has been about how terrible the British were. And while that is true, the caste system existed well before the British were there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a horrific thing. You know, we think in America, you know, there's the upward mobility and whatever, and you can go out and you can, you know, determine your own future. And like, yeah. Well, that's none of that's remotely true in Indian culture. You could be Michael Jordan, let's say, and they still wouldn't let you play basketball.
Yeah.
You know, or at least not professionally. It wouldn't matter how good you were because you were born at a certain.
Yeah, it's like the living embodiment of reincarnation theory.
Sure.
Where you move up or down, and where you're born, that's it, and you learn something, that's and maybe in your next go round.
Maybe you improve, maybe you don't. Maybe you go downhill, maybe you come back as a you know, animal, and you have to figure that out.
Yep.
But anyway, you can ignore all. I mean, I can't ignore that. As you know, the viewer that I am, but right. If you're just looking into this and you don't want to see the politics or how well he actually, I mean, because the caste system is pretty, they're the haves and haves not, but there are definitely the haves nots are still broken into groups as well.
Yeah.
And this film to a certain degree is able to give us a peek at all of those groups in one way or another. They're, you know, the representation in this film is pretty amazing because it doesn't feel forced in the least. Although some people would say one of the groups is more forced than any other, but I would disagree. But, you know, anyway, some people don't like men in dresses.
Right. So, but yeah, so we have, it's a revenge film. There's also current politics, current religion, current class, but all of that is taking place around and in many ways independent of his mission, which is to revenge. He's
exactly. Yes.
So it's interesting.
It's born from that to a certain degree because of, you know, that certain events happen because of, but it's not specific. He's not, you know, like, I'm going to take down this system. All that's kind of, you know, what he sort of ends up doing to a certain extent, or that's a byproduct. That's a byproduct of him just wanting to rectify this wrong that he, you know, he basically destroyed his life, and he's pretty pissed off about it.
As you would be. So
I would be, yes.
Yeah. So this is actually really, it's well put together. It's well shot. Like I said, the action scenes are really good. The training montage does not fit Western sensibilities, I don't think. I found that to be weird.
Well, sure. But
the training montage is a trope, and that's fine. I have no problem with that. This one was just weird. But that's a cultural thing, I think. And I'm okay with that.
To me, it plays better than the go-to that I have for this, of the completely unnecessary training sequence, is the Captain America, the series, whatever the series was called, where the training episodes and that, where it's like, we get it.
Falcon and Winter Soldier.
We know how this works, and you don't have to,
we're watching. That's more of a character struggle than a training montage. Because most of that was just Sam breaking through his own issues. But yeah, I know, I see what you're saying. If there's an unnecessary one, that was it. So, yeah. But this is interesting in that so much happens outside of what our main character's intents start out as. And they don't even really change.
This is a film where nothing really goes to plan. And so what's plan B? And when that doesn't work, what else do we got?
Yeah. I think it's really well done. I really do.
I kind of love the movie, to be honest with you.
You can kind of love it. That's fine. I got no problem with that. I don't know. I don't know how it did. It made at least 10, I think, at the box office.
It did about 10, which ironically, apparently, because back to, not that this is on that board, but so apparently Netflix paid $30 million for it.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up thinking, for whatever reason, we can't release this. Now, the cynics say it's because they were trying to get inroads in with India.
Sure.
And they decided that if that was the case, that you know, this probably was not the film that was going to get them into the country.
I could see where that could be a problem.
Yeah. So, but that's just hearsay. Anyway, but they, apparently they sold the film to basically Jordan Peele saw the film, loved it, convinced Universal pick it up, and they paid $10 million for it. And so...
So Universal's even.
Universal's pretty darn close. You know, I don't know how much they did for advertising, but they're going to, you know, they're going to make their money.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, initially, it's weird because I don't... There has been some pushback of people who I don't understand their reasoning for not liking it, but there are people out there who just don't like it. And I don't know if that's because it's slightly different than the revenge thrillers that we're used to seeing, because it has, I don't know what it is. But I'm a little surprised that there are some people who just are dismissing it as, you know,
I don't want to point out the part. And I know what aspect of the film you're talking about, but that's an actual thing in India. So it's like, I know what the argument's going to be. It's going to be, why is this in there? Well, because it's there. Because you know, nobody decided to put something in the film it's just to put it in there.
Right.
So, but yeah, like I said, I don't want to say it. I don't want to draw attention to it.
No. Anyway, but I really like the film. I thought I liked it more. And maybe I liked it more because it felt incredibly dangerous. Because again, the subtext and some of the, you know, the byproduct of what he's talking about in this is pretty heavy. And it is something that, you know, India as a country, or at least as a public, you know, the public face, doesn't want to acknowledge.
Yeah.
So when I started getting into plays and movies and things, I remember reading about plays that back in the day had to be shut down because they caused riots.
Yeah.
Because people went in, saw them, and were so riled up by what they saw on the stage that, you know, that basically art was dangerous and powerful. And so every time I see a movie that's kind of feels that way, because you don't get many anymore,
mm-hmm.
it really kind of just gets me excited.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that it's like, oh my gosh, you show this to the right people, and there's it's going to literally cause a full-blown riot.
Yep.
Like, wow. And to me, that's powerful.
And hold that thought.
Yeah.
For the second half of this episode.
There we go.
Monkey Man, if you're an action, if you just want to watch this as a straight action film, solid straight action revenge movie.
Yeah. Brutal.
And very brutal in a lot of spots. But still shot really well, acted really well. It's good. So check it out. It's already in theaters.
Yes. And it's, I don't know if it would be one of my top 10 films of the year, but it might be one of my top 10 enjoyed films of the year. So I don't know, but Dev Patel, you never would have thought he would do this. It seems so out of character for him, which again plays right into what makes it so good.
Yep.
Is you just don't really see that coming from him. You're like, oh well,
yeah,
wow,
absolutely. So
okay,
it's nice sometimes when they stretch.
Let's see it. Let's
yeah, so go see it.
Yeah, it's great.
Hey everyone, welcome back to season 9 of the Visually Stunning Movie Podcast. If you like what you're seeing and hearing, please feel free to like us, share us, follow us wherever you're listening to us, actually. If you're on YouTube, click subscribe, that would be great. Go to the website at vsmoviepodcast.com, and that will give you links to all of our socials. It'll give you write-ups of stuff that's not audio, but you'll get pretty much everything there. So if you like what you're seeing and hearing, make sure you share it with everyone else. Now let's get back to the show.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This week, drama, A24, much talked about leading up to Civil War,
which was written and directed by the guy who did who wrote Dread, ironically.
Who did?
He wrote Dread.
Oh yeah. So
Alex
Garland.
Alex did Dread.
Who's written a lot of wacky stuff? Let's put it that way. He has written a lot of wacky stuff. In case you've been living under a rock, takes place in an undetermined future America.
Civil War.
And there is a civil war. But it's not A versus B. There are at least three factions. There's the Western forces. There's the Southern. Or there's the... the Western forces. There's the Southern section. There's the United States. I did love the fact... Okay, so before we get too far into this, because if you have heard of this... People are going to have thoughts about this movie. Alex Garland has gone on the record to say he doesn't define any side in any manner there, because that's not what the film is about per se. So there are no direct correlations. And I think it's smart that there's actually more than two sides, because now you can't make these apples to apples comparisons.
And I also think, and I know he's talking about this, and I haven't really paid attention to what his reasoning was, but a lot of people were like, there's no way that Texas and California would be on the same side.
And we still don't know why. But yeah, it's like Texas, California, and New Mexico, Arizona. It's the Southwest.
And there's Florida doing something.
Yep.
But the thing that I thought that's great about that is it doesn't really matter.
No.
It's just that there are factions.
Yes.
And it doesn't like say, this is the ideology of this team. This is the ideology of that team.
Nope.
It's not about that at all.
It hits so much because this follows four journalists as they try to get from New York City to Washington, D.C., which is about an hour, 2 hour drive. However, they can't do that. They have to go west to Pittsburgh and do a U-turn and come back through West Virginia to try to get, because the battle lines are all over the place. The president, played by Nick Offerman, is saying that the United States is about to put down the secessionists. However, everyone else is saying Washington, D.C. is about to fall and he's going to lose power. I think one of the great things that Garland does here is that Nick Offerman is a third term president, which automatically puts you in the realm of, I mean, we can go into politics if some people want to, if you want to hit me up about it's like, look, we've already moved past the America we are at that point. Okay. So just stop with again, there are no apples to apples, but this story is about these four journalists traveling and seeing all of these different things and having to deal with people going, journalist, or are you, you know, American? Because that whole argument about what kind of American is not which side do you support. Yeah. It turns into nativism. Are you from America? The original set.
And if you are,
then we can start to quibble.
You're right.
Kirsten Dunst is Lee. She is a grizzled photojournalist who is famous and well respected, and is idolized by young Kaylee Spaney in this film, who still looks 12. She has not changed since she showed up in Pacific Rim 2, which, by the way, was just on television. However, yeah, I do love Kaylee Spaney.
No, I saw a clip from that, and I was like, oh, my gosh, she really hasn't.
She has not changed zero. She looks the most different, by the way, quick tangent, in Devs from FX. Awesome. Ironically, also with Nick Offerman. Great show, by the way, if you haven't watched it.
It's Alex Garland as well.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
That's what I do.
So we get some history, and again, Garland sprinkles things throughout this, and there's some great dialogue in here. But in that dialogue, he'll give you kind of clues around the world. I think it was hilarious because at one point somebody said the phrase Portland Maoists, which I thought was awesome. As we're discussing all of these different things, but Kaylee Spaney is talking to Lee. Young Jesse is talking to Lee about what she knows about her because she idolizes her, and she goes, "Well, what do you know about me?" She goes, "Well, you're Lee, blah blah blah, and you at like 23, you took the photo of the Antifa massacre, which means nothing. Because it can mean the Antifa massacred people or the Antifa were massacred. So you can't draw a direct line. But she photographed an event that was so important that made her career. And now she's older and war weary and whatnot.
Well, I don't know if you'd say I don't think she starts off war weary. I think that's her journey in this film to a certain extent. I think she's dehumanized to a certain extent to distance herself from what it is that she documents, which, working with journalists and that sort of thing, there is an element of that that is absolutely true.
And we've seen that in other movies.
I mean, if you're going to, and I've seen it in real life. I mean, it's the sort of thing that in her case, she's kind of distanced herself because she's not about taking sides.
Right.
It's not about what's right or wrong. It's about what's happening in front of her.
Yeah.
So it to a certain extent, she's ambivalent towards, or I don't know if ambivalent is the right, but she doesn't really care about the war, or she's not openly like, well, I hope these people. She's opinionless in that sense.
And because she has to be, because what she's seen would just eat her up. And that's what we see. In Jesse, that's what we see early on. Yeah. And we see her evolution into becoming able to perform the duties that she thinks she wants to do. Because you have to be able to divorce yourself in certain ways to do what needs to be done as a journalist.
And if you think that's not true, I can testify I have had to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm not even the one down there taking the pictures.
Right.
So it's just, don't think that's made up. That's 100% true.
Oh, yeah. Because they're documenting. So she and her friend Joel, he's a journalist. She's a photojournalist. They're trying to get to Washington, D.C. before it falls, before it is reporting to be about to fall. Again, we don't know. Everything we know, we learn from this group as it travels.
Sure. What information is real and what's fake? Very timely. Or always timely, probably, when it comes to war and whatnot,
Yeah. Any war, any period.
Yeah. I should say, you look at the propaganda films that Germany was doing towards the end of the war, and, they would never admit that they were losing because that was impossible.
Yeah.
So it's a similar, I mean, it's, not that everyone needs to be compared to Nazis, because that's not the only example of that. But yes, anyway.
Yeah. So they want to get to D.C. She wants to take his photo before he's arrested, and he wants to interview him. However, it is reported that if a journalist that entered D.C. are just killed.
Yeah.
They're just, journalists are not welcome. They've been branded enemies of the state. Again, we can tangent if you want, but enemies of the state might be, but bias in media is an issue. I'll leave it at that. This might be the least biased group of journalists. Group in their lack of bias.
I would say that in general, in my experience with journalists, they skew more to this side. They would skew into being comfortable with kind of just going with the, you know, I mean, this is more of a realistic presentation, although to an extreme, of what journalists are. Yeah. To think that you're completely devoid of, you know, to try to suggest that you're not impacted and that your beliefs don't somehow influence and get impacted. It's ridiculous. We all know that's not true. But, you know, this group, you know, they genuinely, you know, they've picked no side. They'll go in and shoot people, you know, in and watch people shoot each other, you know, with either side.
Yep.
Whoever will take them will go, you know, sort of thing. But they've been told, hey, look, you can't go, you know, because, you know, they've been blamed for something. Who knows what, but, you know.
Yeah, right. Again, actually, it's vague enough.
Know, I mean, but the, you know, the truth is somebody's losing, and so somebody's lying. And if the press is reporting that you're losing, you're going to say that they're lying.
Right.
If you're, you know, so that's just, it's around and around, and how do we know it's true? And it's really hard. But
and again, the phrase, you know, there's a phrase that gets said a lot of late by politicians, and you're not reporting it right.
Yes.
And take a breath and think about who has said that. All over the place. That's not a one-sidism. That's a politics thing. So that's not you. Take a breath. That's the you know, the royal you out there. So yeah. So politicians always think you're reporting it wrong again. And this is I'm going to say the fantastic end of this. And I don't mean fantastic in a really awesome way. I mean, fantastic in a completely ridiculous and fantasy way. But everything in this, Garland blows up to make the most points. And this film is making the point that Lee makes when she's talking to an old news guy, Sammy, played by Stephen McKinley Henderson, who you know. When she says, every time I came home, every time I sent photos back from the front lines, she goes, I thought I was sending a warning, and here we are, you know, and they're on the road camping, watching a firefight out across the woods a couple miles away, deciding whether they're going to go see it in the morning, if it's still going on.
Yeah.
So, but that is what Garland is doing with this entire film. It's a, hey, if you're not careful, that's the whole point of this movie. And I don't see any other point to this movie. It's like, hey, if you're not careful, and it's division, it's demonization, it's dehumanizing. It can only end in one place. And that's the place that they're in this movie.
Well, and not only can it only end in one place, it ends the same way.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of good guy, bad guy, sometimes when war and conflict is involved, is they're really blurred. It's hard to who is the good guy, who is the bad guy. Well, you know what, frankly?
Well, yeah, I mean,
both. And it, a little bit of both.
And in a conflict like this, the bad guy is the one trying to kill me from the house across the field.
Yes.
Which that sequence is great. It's like, who is he? Don't know. What's he doing?
Well,
he's trying to kill me. What are you doing? Trying to kill him first.
Who's giving you orders? What are you?
Nothing.
Yeah, it's like, what side are you on? What are you talking about? What side am I on? I just don't. I'm on. We're trying not to get killed by this guy.
Yeah, we're trying not to get killed by this guy. And literally, that's their goal. The theater was pretty quiet at the end of this. A lot of people sat a lot longer than they might have normally. I've seen a lot of somebody, you know, there are people that are posting out there that, you know, they came out of the screening and they wanted to be physically ill. And I think if you are not already aware or versed in history or politics or whatever, yes, you might find this film disturbing to the point where you might want to be physically ill. But I felt sad at the end of it. You know what, you know, a great comedy action line is when somebody says something and they've been saying it all the whole movie, and then it happens and they're like, man, I hate being right. Yeah, you know, it's like, sometimes I watch this movie and I'm just like, yeah, you know, I hate that I'm right. You know, when I can agree with everything that Garland is saying in this film. It's like, yeah, yeah. I can't fault any particular approach that he took.
Well, because it's not about a particular.
Yeah. Well, and again, that's, I say this a lot. It's like, yeah, you know, I say this, I'm not a political expert or a legal expert or this expert or that expert, but I do know people. Yeah. And it's like, and if you know people, and not just one group of people, if you know people, then you can see things in this movie and you're just like, yep, 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 yep. And so, yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, and they get to the end of the film. They get to Washington, D.C. And I don't want to ruin that because I think that last sequence is just awesome. The whole White House sequence. Okay. I think that's great. I do take issue with the last bit in the hallway because it's just terribly cliche, and you see it coming.
Yeah, but there's an element to it that I think is, it's the catalyst moment to a certain extent for a particular character.
Yeah. And it is, but I think that bit would have happened if that hadn't played out the way that he did it.
Sure.
Yeah. So, sure. I mean, that was my problem.
I'd also argue that it's two characters, actually, now that I think about it. It's two defining moments for two characters. So to me, I don't disagree. I don't know that was a part where, like, I don't know how I feel about this. But I think the argument would be that ultimately it is the resolution would be the wrong word, but it's the character arcs.
Yeah.
That's where they are completed. I guess the completion of the cycle or whatever.
You want. Yeah. Yeah. That's like the one part where I was just like, I know you're just watching it. And it's just like, that's not, you know, me going, oh, that's how that situation's going to play out. It's like, oh, that's how Hollywood's going to have that situation play out. And it's just like,
it's not that it hasn't been sort of set up.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I know.
But it's, I mean, I know I get what you're saying, and I don't know. And I think I at least somewhat agree with you.
Yeah.
At least somewhat.
Yeah. But I think
I don't know.
I think this is really well done. A lot of times you felt like you were the cameraman following them around. There's not a lot of set pieces here.
No, well,
it's a lot of movement.
And it's kind of interesting because you hear Civil War and you think this is going to be a big movie,
right?
You know, big action fight scene. It's big. Yeah. So there was a part of me that's like, yeah, but A24 is putting the house in there. Sure, they've made some money lately, but
yeah,
I don't know that they've made $100 million. And this film is not that film. It's not a huge action film.
Mm-mm.
There are action sequences.
Yes,
it's definitely not a cheap film to be made.
No.
But it's about these characters and them passing through. And these characters aren't soldiers. And these characters are outsiders who, to a certain extent, who just kind of drop in and visit.
Yep.
And observe.
A chunk of this was shot in a Ford Excursion.
Yeah.
So and the budget's listed as an estimated $50 million. And yes, insane. That big that end sequence had to be pricey.
Yeah. Well, yes, and yeah, but I think that $50 million, I mean, that's expensive.
That's not, but it's not overly expensive for this movie.
No. And that's where I would, you know, I'd be like, but,
yeah, I think
you've seen films with far less results made with
for a lot more money.
Yeah, so yeah, I think it's money well spent. I just, you know, I think there are people who see it and think, oh, this is just going to be a big budget action film, and it's not that at all.
No.
And there are some people who feel like the advertising campaign for it has not been completely honest, and I don't know that that's true. I think our audience expectation, I think, is getting in the way of sort of some of the way we're perceiving this film.
Yeah.
Because you think, well, it's got to be this movie, right? Well, no, it's not.
No, it's not. No,
it's not that movie at all.
No, it's not. Which I think is gonna anger some people that it's not.
I have not read reviews, but I've seen headlines, and I go, well, yeah, they didn't know it. Yeah.
One of the things I said when we came out was, it's like, 99% of the audiences are probably going to take the wrong thing from this movie. What is in the film is what you take in, and what you bring out of it is what you bring out. 99% of the people are going to bring out or take the wrong thing from it. And I hope I'm wrong, but that's my gut is that 99% of the people are going to take the wrong thing from this movie.
And, you know, I guess then you would say, so is that the director's fault?
No, that's the audience's fault.
No. There you go.
And by the audience, let's be clear. I'm not saying that people that go see movies are Hollywood has trained audiences, and the United States has trained its citizenry to think in ways and expect in ways. And this film doesn't fit either of those ways. No. And therefore a way you will try to impose a way on it. And that's wrong. You need to throw your way away and look what the film is saying.
Yeah, because it's not about, and I think that's what's, you know, I think that's kind of the brilliance of it. And I'm not saying that, I'm going to be honest, I haven't completely digested everything, and I don't know exactly where, you know, as far as, you know, is how good is the film?
And, it's good. I mean,
it's good, but I just haven't processed how good or how I feel. And, you know, I don't know yet. And I think that's better than me actually knowing.
Right.
Immediately how I feel about it. I think that the fact that it wasn't, I think, even what I expected to be, and the fact that it is so.
Yeah. And the fact that you're in the news business.
Sure. Sure. Well, and that was, I mean, honestly, that was, I mean, I was fairly impressed by that aspect, because I think that's people don't acknowledge that it really can be difficult to work in news, and yeah. I don't know how, you know, I just did something. There were things that even I don't go out in the field mostly. Mostly in studio doing things, but there are things that I have seen and heard that have radically changed me, or at least, you know, have had a dramatic impact on me. And a lot of this is secondhand sort of thing, or, you know, reading through court documents, reading where, you know, sometimes what you hear on TV is toned down because you don't need to know the most horrific aspects of certain stories.
Yeah. There's certain things you don't need to know.
There are certain things that, and we'll do this in the newsroom, and this may surprise some people, where it'll be like, I just read this. You know what? If you don't have to, don't. You know, don't read this, because what's in it is, you know, just the written words on certain things, you'll never get that out of your head. And it's horrific, some of the things that people do to each other and whatnot. So,
yeah.
This movie takes that one, because, you know, she's literally, they're literally in the middle of it, taking pictures of things as it happens.
Yep.
But there's some horrific stuff. Numerous things of horrific things in this movie, but most of them either have happened before or it's actually, I think everything. I don't think there's a single horrific event in this film that hasn't happened before.
I don't know if it's happened here, but again, that's the whole point.
But not necessarily here, but somewhere.
Right.
Like in modern war, all of these things have happened.
Yep.
And that's kind of terrifying as well, because as much as you'd like to think, it's never that. No, it has been.
Yeah.
And just because we're in one part of the world doesn't mean it can't be here too.
Yeah, there's one other thing that threw me, that shook me out of the film when it happened. And that was the scene with the lie.
Okay.
And the fact that there were not serious chemical burns or any reaction to lie bothered me. Because that would have been just a beautiful metaphorical image at that point.
No, I disagree, as you're saying. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
So, but he just didn't want to. It was didn't fit. So that happened, and they just shrugged it off. I was pulling up Rotten Tomatoes, and it's 90% right now.
I'm a little surprised that it's 90, but I mean, not disappointed by it. It's just as it is.
Would you have thought higher or lower?
I just based on some of the reactions I've seen, I would have thought lower.
Well, I'm looking at the not fresh.
Okay.
It's like, so I'm not going to name any of these people. You can go find them. It's vague under the impression it's making a bold point about journalism and society when it's less, it's more technique to world building and characters. When in reality, it's fairly transparent and vacuous. Disagree.
100% disagree.
Bottom line, Alex Garland's Civil War is poorly researched. There's more, but that I was just like, shut up. If I said the name, you'd roll your eyes and I could hear it from here.
Okay, poorly researched. Okay, great.
Yeah, right?
It's not based on actual events exactly.
Right. So Garland,
anyway, sorry.
Garland holds himself at a distance from his subject, more excited about themes than the ideas linking them to the situations and players enacting. No, it's kind of the point.
Yeah.
So I don't know why that's not, I mean, that sounds like a Dunkirk disagreement. Yeah. I agree with what you said. That's why I like it.
Yeah.
Civil War is a film that feels a lot like that guy at the office that likes to complain about politics, but doesn't vote.
It is about journalists who are supposed to be...
they're not supposed to tell you how they're voting.
Yeah. And
this one compares it to Men.
I don't know that you can compare this to Men.
As was true in Men, Garland's epiphany feels shallow, as if delivered from an outsider looking in. The whole point is that they are outsiders. But the epiphany is not shallow. Or maybe your epiphany was shallow, critic person.
My life experience. No, I wasn't. You know, and there are films that have press in it that are centered on press.
Yep.
That within 5 minutes, I can tell you how this is.
Right.
No,
so
they just don't know.
So, yeah. Anyway, so that's a smattering of some of the not freshes. There. What was this one? Yeah.
You know, to a certain degree, I'd have 4-letter words for them. So.
I know, right?
So it's just a 4-letter word followed by a 3-letter word.
Yeah, people are missing the point. So, I enjoyed it a lot, as much as one can enjoy a film like this.
I think ultimately I'm going to give it probably a really high score, but it's just for me that there is so much to process. And I think maybe it's me trying to figure out exactly what was being said or what was not being said. And the fact that it wasn't the movie I expected and the fact that it was so not directly political.
Yeah. And I think that's a part that's probably a huge chunk of the negative reviews. People are just trying to figure out why, how can they knock it down because it wasn't the movie they wanted it to be?
And I don't know, but I don't see. But there's a part of me that just thinks that's pretty darn brilliant.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so.
Well, to be fair, let's be clear. We've talked about misleading trailers in the past. We've talked about, but even then, I don't necessarily. And again, I try not to watch a lot of trailers at this point, but I couldn't help but see one or two. I saw some clips. I don't feel like anything in those misled me in the context of the film as a whole.
I don't either. I think that, again, it's the individuals reacting that they did not get the movie they thought they were going to get.
And now I'm going to explain why I'm angry about that.
And let's be clear. I'm not saying that there haven't been trailers that have misrepresented the films. There have been plenty of those.
Yeah.
And some of them were for films where you're like, well, why didn't you just tell me what this really was? Because it's actually better.
Yeah.
Than what you presented it as, because you presented it as some generic thriller or whatnot. And I mean, the one that comes to mind is it's actually a 24 film. It Comes at Night. I think that the ads for that were so off, far away from what that film actually was. And I think I really liked the film that they made better.
Yep.
But it probably wasn't nearly as marketable. The film that they made, so they had to. Anyway, that's another. I think if you take the role of the journalist when watching this, don't go in thinking I'm gonna make some judgment on this. Just that's not really. It's more of there's a warning in there. There is a study of human nature, unfortunately, in there. There's a lot to be learned from it, I guess. Don't try to teach the movie what you think it needs to know. Let the movie teach you what it has to say.
Right.
Do you have to agree with it?
No.
But at least listen, hear them out.
Which in and of itself is a lesson of the movie.
Sure. Yeah. Hear it out.
There's going to be a lot more anger after when the audience gets involved. Just critics.
I think there will be people who, despite the fact that the parallels aren't really there, will just make those parallels.
Yes. They will. 100%.
And so, that to me is going to be the saddest part of this.
Yep.
Is you can make a film that is exactly not what people are going to accuse it of being, and you still get accused of being that movie.
That's bothersome.
It's not that movie, folks.
It's not that movie. 100% not that movie. So that opens this Friday, the 12th. Yes, April 12th. And speaking of April 12th, don't forget the Monday, the April 15th, your taxes are due, people. So, pay for your government.
Yeah. So go through a civil war and then get some tax returns.
And be even more angry when you write that check.
Yeah. I do want to say it was awesome to see this in IMAX. I really like that. I saw a comment or two about the soundtrack. I think they did a really good job with it.
It felt minimal.
Yeah, it is. And the songs that they picked some songs that run unusual choices. Early on, there's a song by a band called Suicide. That in my head, I've always kind of replaced the opening of Apocalypse Now, the end by the Doors. For some reason, in my head, every time I hear Suicide's Rocket USA, I think of that scene. So to see it in this film, where it wasn't the same sort of scene, but the fact that it kind of popped up in a movie that was sort of... for whatever reason, on par with what was in my head, was I sat there for a minute. I went, "Is this really? Is this what I think it is?" And Alex Garland, Suicide is an electronic punk band from the late '70s. You might think that sounds like how in the world, but they're, you listen, it's very droney, it's very punk rock, it's very, you know, in your face and whatnot. And so it really made sense, the film. And there was a part of it that was just kind of really exciting. I was like, well, what if they did the whole movie with just that? And then I thought, no, that would be too much. Mm-hmm. But having one song, and then also the singer had the closing credit song as well, which I thought was interesting. But anyway, but that's total music geekery. Brought to you by me.
Always welcome.
Because there's only like four or five songs in the movie, and most of them are Christmas carols.
Oh yeah.
Which you will figure out why that is.
Yeah. True.
Yes. Which is very the true. Saddest Christmas village you will ever see in the history of Christmas villages. So.
Fact.
Wow. Oh my gosh. So there's stuff in this film that I just look at and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, you feel like Joel at the Western Forces camp before they go.
Yes, yes.
Which we won't tell you why, but...
Well, and again, there are going to be people, because he has a moment and he seems to get over it to a certain extent. That's what journalists have to do. And I know that sounds like... I don't know what that sounds like, but it sounds inhuman, impossible, all sorts of things. But the you know, most, if you took on journalism, something that you're serious about, and you take what you do seriously, you're going to get disappointed. You're going to get shattered. You're going to get beat up. And then you're going to be faced with the decision of, do I continue doing this?
Yep.
Or am I done? And I would say that both reactions, 100% understandable.
Right.
Like, there are so many people who walk away from journalism because they just can't do it anymore. And those people tend to be people who did stuff that was pretty heavy, that, you know, has its toll. And eventually you got to say, I'm done.
Yeah, you can really see it so much. But again, some people are like that. The journalists are heroes in our bed. It's like, yeah, you know what? They're watching.
Yeah.
Now be the guy that's doing and having that done.
Sure. And I would say, I don't know that I would call them heroes. We can have this conversation about Maripol. What was it? Ukraine.
Oh, 20 Days of Mariupol.
Yeah, there you go, Mariupol. That, I don't view those guys necessarily, are they heroes? I guess in a way, because they're documenting. I just think when I watch that film, it's just their gut.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, it's their dedication to present something in a way that history can't say that's not what happened.
Right.
So in a way, that regard, I would say that they're heroes, but they're not heroes in the same sense of.
Right. And again, that's why I pushed for it to be a Utah Film Critics Documentary of the Year, which it was.
Yeah, I know. And but that's the thing too. No, it's a different sort of hero.
Yeah. It's heroic in its fashion.
And yes.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So Civil War, whatever you think that movie is, just forget that and go watch the movie. If you wanted to see it, you might not want to see it. And that is okay too.
Yeah. There's some darkness there.
Yeah. But if you want to see it, leave your garbage outside.
Yeah.
And just watch the film. And then think about it.
I think that, you know, when there's initially you're kind of like, okay, but who's who? What side is this? What's going on?
Doesn't matter.
And that's kind of, yeah, ultimately that's what makes this film a lot easier to recommend, I guess. Mm-hmm. It isn't selling
right
a brand, I guess.
Exactly.
If that makes sense. It's not about the brand.
You bet. which again, just don't be that person that takes your crap in with you. So, so that opens this week. We are going to talk about some movies for next week. One of which will probably be Challengers. If you have watched it by then, there's another movie that comes out Monday, a quasi animated film that Ryan has not watched yet, that I desperately want to talk about.
Okay.
And it's not going to be a deep conversation, but I still want to be able to talk about the film. We should probably have Scott on, cause he's the one that made me watch it. Sure. Should try to get Scott on.
And Scott Renshaw, who writes for City Weekly, I think that he gets kind of penciled in as a certain kind of individual. And then you figure out that he loves going to Disneyland and he's a huge proponent of strange animated films. And I mean, there's a complexity there that I just love.
Yep.
And if Scott tells us to watch a movie,
there's a reason.
There is an absolute reason. And
not agree with it.
No, but there is a reason. And I would say, you know, 99% of the time you go, oh, I get it.
And that's, again, I say the same thing all the time. It's like we're watching this one because Ryan pointed it out to me. Because you've done it a couple times. Like, hey, do you have a screener for this? And it's like, why? No, I don't. But perhaps I should, because now you've mentioned it. And that intrigues me. The fact that you mentioned it, it's like, I'm intrigued because you thought to point it out. Hey, speaking of, did you watch Sting yet?
No.
Oh, my God. That comes out this week, too, I believe.
Okay.
Which... I'll tell you right now, we could talk about it later. It was great. It's absolutely the movie that it is. The movie starts and you identify very quickly what kind of movie it is. And then it gives you that movie. And if you're okay with what kind of movie it tells you it's going to be, it does not disappoint. But if that movie once you figure out what kind of movie it is, if that's not your kind of movie, you're probably not going to enjoy it. But it absolutely goes, this is our concept, and now we're going. And if you're okay, you're going, and you're going to have a good time.
Here we go, folks.
So, yep. It doesn't say this is the kind of movie it is, and then give you something different. And halfway through, it's like, nope, this is what the movie is, and this is what you get to the end. It's like, good stuff. That was my mystery movie a couple weeks ago that I saw. Thank you to AMC Theaters for that. For Mystery Monday. So that was cool. I'm going to have to keep watching for those. They had one last night, but unfortunately I was watching Civil War. Unfortunately, I'm happy I watched Civil War, but I didn't get to go see it. Maybe next week. I don't know if we have anything on Monday. We'll find out. But yes, so Civil War. We talked about, what did we talk about in the first half hour? The first half hour of this.
Monkey Man.
So we had an action movie. We have a war drama. Cool. Political drama? Social drama. Well,
sure, but I think we should point out that Monkey Man is the far more political of the two, which I don't think any of us saw coming.
No, not at all. It is definitely more overtly political. It says things.
Lots of things.
So yeah, surprisingly. But both worth seeing. Maybe do a double feature this weekend.
Yeah, you can do that. They're different enough that... What would I do first?
Well, do Monkey Man because it's action, and then you go get some dinner, and you talk about how fun it was, and then you go watch Civil War, and then you don't talk on the drive home. Or you do talk on the drive home, which is probably what you should be doing. Because you don't want to see Civil War first. Because you don't want to eat after that.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So go see Monkey Man, then go get some dinner, and then go see Civil War.
Completely buy into your argument.
There you go. So there you go. We do have things to watch, and we will. Do not forget to follow us, like us, share us on all the social media outlets and wherever you watch and or listen to this and all of our other stuff. Visit the website, vsmoviepodcast.com, and you'll find everything we talk about and everything I write about. Till we see you again, I am Mark. That is Ryan. Bye, Ryan.
Thanks, buddy.
And we will talk to you all later.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.